I think the main message for people is, at least for me, it's just around shifting that fear of technology into inspiration. Mm. And right now, yes, we are inundated with just this, you know, fear. And when we look at documentaries like The Social Dilemma that became very, very popular, it was a lot about the problem, very, very little about the solution. I mean, bless Tristan Harris. I think he's done a lot of incredible work, but where is the solution? And then we look at someone like Elon Musk, and he has these like doomsday AI predictions. And he's the guy that, you know, is freaking behind OpenAI, which is like the biggest AI company, and using GPT-3 that's kind of taking over a lot of the space.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that there is a lot of room for positive messaging. And to be quite honest, I think a lot of the people that have this doom and gloom approach at the very top of the food chain in the tech world are very unhappy people. Mm-hmm. And what they're creating, what they're promoting is literally just a mirror and a reflection on themselves.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. So on today's show, I am super, super stoked. I'm going to be talking to Lyle Maxon. Now, who Lyle is, he is a founder of a company called Entheo Digital. I did some research, I don't know, maybe about a month ago, and I ran across this article about Lyle, about his company Entheo Digital, and about how they are taking gaming and turning digital medicine into a modality for transformation through gaming. Now, that might sound really interesting, and it really is. And really what they're doing is transformative entertainment. So Lyle started his career as a creative director for some of the world's largest music festivals. He was impacting thousands of people that way. And now he's evolved into someone who is now bringing digital therapeutics and actually looking to get an FDA clearance for digital medicine. So Lyle's work includes themes like creating a transformative environment and creating benevolent technology. And he's kind of creating the future of virtual reality and shifting from fear to inspiration in the tech space. Really interesting stuff here. I was fascinated. I wrote an article about it and I've been thinking about it quite a bit. So I'm so excited for you guys to learn and listen to this very interesting interview with Lyle Maxon from Entheo Digital. Hello. Hello, Lyle.
How's it going?
It's going great. And thanks for coming on the show, Lyle. So as I explained in the intro, I read an article about Entheo Digital, specifically around how there's now video games being developed for transformational work, specifically looking at being able to impact neuroscience using video games. And I think that's fascinating. I'm involved with some projects that are specifically looking at music's impact on sort of neurochemistry and loops in neurochemistry and all of that. So I'm super excited to have you on the show. And I want to, first of all, around this video game, tell me a little bit about what the genesis of that was. Like, when did you decide that you wanted to develop a transformational video game that serves as a psychedelic journey?
Yeah. So my approach and answer will be a little different than my business partner, who was the lead developer. And he kind of had this, you know, quote unquote download during a psychedelic experience at Burning Man. I think it was in 2012 or 2011, essentially just looking at the profound effects of group toning and people that have experienced any sort of group chanting. It is usually very, very transcendental. And yeah, I believe he had the experience essentially underneath a light activated dome. So like light LED panels that were activated towards music, And the crowd that was underneath the dome just decided to do this group toning, and he thought how cool it would be to combine the two together. My approach was very different, but I do come from the music festival space. Mm-hmm. So I was a creative director and produced very large EDM concerts and festivals through college and then outside of college with a creative agency I started. So all of my work was really focused on what I call transformative entertainment. So Robin and I, and Robin's my business partner and lead developer, we kind of came at it at a similar approach. Him, obviously, from more of the engineer and game developer mindset, and mine was more from just understanding group dynamics and how to really like infuse consciousness and kind of Trojan horse transformational content into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. I was just very disenchanted by the traditional, you know, spiritual paths, really, like anything from yoga and meditation. Even though I do practice those things, I just saw friends and family around me struggling greatly with trying to introduce that practice into their life and then maintaining it and feeling benefits from it. So what I saw at music festivals was people having these radical transformations in 2 or 3 days. And, you know, a lot of that is due to community that's there and the substances that they're taking and the journey that they're going on and usually spending most of their money to, you know, go to a place in the middle of nowhere. But there was these specific activations. I was really inspired by some people like the creators of Lightning in a Bottle and, of course, Burning Man and things. And yeah, so for me, I was really building these physical worlds, these physical environments for people to explore and create in, whether that was something called the Lost Hotel, which was this big pop-up glamping hotel that had all these different activations inside of it, whether it was workshops or like different technologies, wellness technologies, float pods. I'd bring in like deprivation tanks into music festivals. But I went from understanding the impact that creating these physical worlds could make to then understanding what a virtual world could do, because it's infinitely scalable, it's much cheaper, and it's meeting people where they're at, mm-hmm. which is a lot of people don't know that the video game industry dwarfs every other entertainment industry by far. The TV industry is pretty much on par with them, meaning like Netflix and all the streaming services. But if you look at movies, music, and sports globally combined isn't even equal to video game revenue. It's something like $400 billion a year in video game revenue. So just understanding kind of the confluence of that. And I think I was able to really see how the zeitgeist transforms and evolves because I was in the electronic dance music scene right as it was really taking off and seeing how something went from an underground rave movement into this huge pop culture phenomena, and seeing how that could happen in video games for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And, you know, being a burner myself and being, you know, 5 consecutive burns, it's a transformational experience for sure. And what you're bringing now into the video game sort of industry, that Trojan horse, as you call it, right, is enabling and giving access to transformation without even having to attend a yoga retreat or something that may seem a little hippy dippy. So I totally get it. Let's back up a little bit. Can you share a little bit about your journey? Like, tell me how your life transformed from essentially a festival producer to someone who's really working in the consciousness and the psychedelic space.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty natural transition for me, to be honest. I think some people have their awakening moment and kind of, you know, detach from the matrix and get involved in, you know, all sorts of conspiracy theories and everything kind of overnight, you know, like there's just a switch that's flipped. And then others, like myself, it was a gradual transformation, like from when I was about 17. I was actually having this conversation with a friend last night because he had the Tibetan Book of the Dead on his coffee table. And I read that book when I was 17, which, you know, is kind of unusual. I also got really into to lucid dreaming and doing deep dream work. I was really inspired by some of the things that I was reading, specifically this author named Robert Wagner, who's this like expert lucid dreamer, and understanding that I could access my subconscious or even potentially the collective conscious through dream work, and started drinking different types of weird herbs that I would order online or doing something called like biphasic or polyphasic sleep, where I would wake up in the middle of the night, stay up for an hour, which allows my body to drop quicker into REM when I go back to sleep. All sorts of things that I still really focus on that practice on a day to day. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's always been about just kind of the convergence of entertainment and this transformational culture. And what I was understanding when working in the mainstream event world was that there just wasn't any of that going on. If you looked at Ultra or EDC, Coachella even, now it's starting to shift a lot. And I've hoped that I had something to do with that and saw that ripple happen. But you know, it was really preaching to the choir when you went to a Burning Man or a Lightning in a Bottle. It was all people that were already on path. They understood, you know, what these techniques were about. They understood prioritizing their inner growth. And then you would go to, you know, these festivals that would have usually 5 to 10 times more people. And it was a complete opposite. And there's trash everywhere on the ground. And there was, you know, concrete jungles and 15 stages. And no one really cared about anything besides the headliner. So, yeah. And then going into the video game world, that is my, like when I was a kid, I grew up in the 90s. I was an avid video game player. And it was just like a very natural, yeah, transition for me. I was like, okay, you know, what's happening in the music festival culture was very intoxicating for me personally as a creator, just to be able to like see the palpable transformation. But at the end of the day, like you're lucky if you have maybe 100,000 people that could go through an experience, like that would be the highest level of production. You know, like if there's a couple 100,000 people at an event, maybe half of them go through an experience that you create. And when I saw what video games were doing, and then of course the rise of VR and AR and the immersive ability of this technology, it just made so much sense. And for me too, it's like with any movement, I think it's really important that the right people get involved at the ground level. And when you look at things like radio, sports, TV, the internet now, big tech, big companies, legacy companies, a lot of times, even with these big media conglomerates, there's a lot of nepotism and, you know, they're just passing down their inheritance and fortune to their sons or daughters. So yes, with something like VR, I think that we have the ability to get in on the ground floor. A lot of people don't know, like the app store on your phone has like 2 to 3 million apps at any given time. The biggest marketplace in VR has 300 apps. So just to like understand that, you know, right now is the ideal place to really be able to lay the foundation, not only to show people what's possible and give them a healthier alternative, but also show developers what's possible for them to program things that actually make the world a better place.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating that you immediately identified that gap that you experienced when going to a mainstream festival versus going to a Burning Man or a festival with intention, right? People are there with a specific intention. They're there for something more than just sort of imbibing and just, you know, just seeing their favorite artist, right? What was partying with a purpose? Was that sort of the seed that eventually, you know, kind of manifested into this?
Yeah, for sure. That tagline was really focused around a big monthly event that I was producing in downtown Phoenix, of all places. That's where I grew up. I went to school out there as well. It was called Ancient Future. Mm-hmm. It was basically a monthly music festival in a nightclub. And yes, that definitely came from how do we give back? How do we align all these people around a collective goal, whether that was a charitable fundraise or a group ceremony? And yeah, really like enabling people to access deeper parts of themselves as opposed to, and we're seeing this a lot in the video game world too. It's like the transition, same thing with social media as well, but it's a transition from this escapism and addiction mechanisms that kind of fuel all of the entertainment industry into this new wave and what I call like benevolent technology, which is focused on actually making you feel better when you take the headset off or when you put your phone down than when you picked it up, which I think is a very novel concept for most people.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really been the focus for me. And it just has kind of, you know, ebbed and flowed throughout the entertainment world, but it feels really good to land in you know, we're playing a lot with AI now as well. So it's really just being at the cutting edge of this exponential technology where I think I can make the most impact.
Yeah. I was talking to someone actually just earlier today. I was mentioning this interview and he told me that at a certain point, I think it was maybe in the last 20 years, that there was some experiments done using Pac-Man. And they actually had the participants wear some sort of cap to be able to determine what the neurofeedback is as they're playing Pac-Man. And they would slowly sort of kind of, you know, I don't know whether it's, again, I'm not a neuroscientist, so this is all completely, I'm just kind of transferring information. But it seemed as though when certain actions were taken, like in the Pac-Man game, there were certain responses given through this cap. Is that similar to what's happening in the game that you're developing? Or kind of walk me through what that might look like. If I'm having a bad day, right? And I say, you know what, instead of me sitting here and playing this video game for 10 hours and escaping and then triggering an addiction, how is this different? Kind of walk me through that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really too familiar with what you're talking about around that specifically. I imagine, you know, there is some games that could be either controlled using your mind, using something like an EEG, you know, brain scan. They have a variety of caps and things, or things that are even embedded in VR headsets now. So there is like this, you know, mental neurological component that you could kind of mix into existing games, or, you know, a lot of times there's like companies, big companies like Amazon that are utilizing virtual reality to train employees. And then they're actually measuring their brainwaves to understand how they're functioning, whether it's like how much cognitive load they have, how much they're like essentially like struggling to do or not to do a task. But then there's, so I kind of break it down in these three parts, and this is the industry that's kind of blossoming along with the psychedelic movement right now, which is called digital therapeutics. So the best way I can describe it is essentially digital health or wellness tools that are regulated by something like the FDA that are essentially now looking at replacing pharmaceuticals in a lot of ways, whether that's around pain relief or around mental health. Obviously, I think there's always going to be a place for some pharmaceuticals, but there's this growing movement to essentially use computers, VR, your cell phone apps to essentially create lasting change in the brain and in the body. And so for me, I kind of break it down into these three categories. The first category is like what we're really all familiar with in the digital therapeutic space, which is anything like health tracking, health monitoring, even like health incentivizing. So even like some pharmaceutical companies have apps that incentivize you to take their pills and make sure to remind you, maybe even gamify that in some way. Then there's kind of the level two digital therapeutics, which are happening a lot right now and getting a lot of FDA clearance, which is essentially replicating the real world. So Applied VR is a really good example. They're a VR experience that was FDA approved for chronic pain, specifically lower back chronic pain. And a lot of the experience for them is essentially replicating nature. So it's like enabling you to drop deep into a natural environment and use something like cognitive behavioral therapy in conjunction with nature to reset your brain and actually have lasting effects on your pain. Another company called like Oxford VR, they're also an FDA approved or FDA cleared device. They're strictly scaling like AI driven cognitive behavioral therapists. So this is, you know, again, this example of phase two is like just taking what we already have and scaling it, because regardless of how many people are worried about technology like replacing things, we have such a huge issue with mental health therapists. I think in the US alone, it's something like one mental health therapist per every 1,600 people. So, you know, when we're talking about replacing, it's really, this is like augmenting. It's an adjunct. It's something that's allowing this to actually be more accessible. Because even those therapists that are one in every 1,600 people, they're usually expensive. You know, and a lot of people can't even afford it, even if they do have access to them. So that's kind of level two, which I'm a strong believer in. But what we're working on is level three. And level three is really focused on creating new, what we call mechanisms of action. So like novel game mechanics, essentially, to bring about a neurological or physiological change. So hence why we kind of coined the term technodelic, is that this experience is not something that you could do in nature necessarily. You're learning skill sets. We kind of call them recently, we've been calling them mental motor skills. So we're teaching skills that you would learn from psychedelics. So, you know, outside of like the epiphanies and the maybe oneness experience or whatever you have during the actual journey of a psychedelic, you are learning skills. You're learning how to surrender. You're learning mindfulness. You know, there's a variety of skills that, you know, you're learning this deep introspection. So what we've been creating is essentially an experience that would enable you to learn those skills, but in a very fun, enjoyable way. And then for people that don't know, the experience is called Sound Self. You use your voice the entire time. So you're vocally toning. And that means any sort of chanting, humming, singing. A lot of times we just instruct people to om, but it is very secular. So, you know, we want to make sure that it's kind of just open to interpretation. But what that's doing is activating your vagus nerve. It's creating a parasympathetic response. And then it's biofeedback, dynamically changing the visuals, the audio, basically turning your voice into almost like a choir. And then the haptics, the vibration. So you actually feel your own voice going through your body. And that drops you very, very deeply into a almost psychedelic state, but a very deep meditative state within only a few minutes. So this is just a really good example of, you know, what we're looking at creating in the future. And this is kind of our flagship product right now.
Yeah. Have there been tests around the efficacy of this, around certain experimental groups or anything like that?
Yeah. So we've done 2 pilot studies. We're currently doing 3 clinical trials. Pilot studies were really just to show, yeah, what is the efficacy around it. And they were very, very promising. You know, for me, I kind of like joke because I'm not the scientist on the team. We do have a chief science officer to explain this much better. But for me, it just makes a lot of sense. Like we're essentially combining a variety of proven scientific modalities and then adding this like very interesting game layer on top of it. But things like vocal toning, it's like the most ancient meditation practice ever. Things like binaural beats or haptic feedback, or right now we're using light therapy, which is this essentially brainwave entrainment. So all of these things have already been validated. We're just combining them all together in an interesting way.
Yeah.
So yes, so we're very, very excited about and very confident about the research as we move forward.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's fascinating, number one, because you're taking a vehicle that is extremely popular, right, among the entire sort of population of the earth, specifically the younger generation, and you're essentially giving them access to transformation within that vehicle. That's incredible. Where do you see the ideal facilitation for this, right? So do you see this being inside? Because you mentioned earlier that Burning Man, you're essentially preaching to the choir, right? So something like this, yes, you'll see this at Burning Man, and it's almost expected at Burning Man, right? But where do you see the ideal application for this? Or how would you see this being facilitated to sort of your everyday, you know, gamer or somebody who's interested in learning about transformation that but doesn't want to necessarily go to psychedelics as of yet?
Yeah. So SoundCell specifically is very interesting because we are pursuing essentially this medical technology route, meaning there's a lot of trade-offs as a company that we're looking at pretty deeply, meaning like we could publish it now on the mainstream gaming markets like Steam, Oculus, HTC, Sony, PlayStation. That's kind of our bread and butter. Our company knows how to do that because my business partner and I, prior to starting Entheo, which is our med tech company, started Andromeda, which was specifically a game publishing company. Mm-hmm. But with that, we're not able to make claims and we're not really able to show scientifically what is happening, mm-hmm. At least at the level that you could if you were a prescription digital therapeutic. But with that, essentially, and when we are looking at pursuing this route and looking at being FDA cleared in the next 2 years, but that means that the demographic or the expanse or scalability that we could have up front is going to be more limited because people will have to be prescribed digital medicine. Mm. So this would be essentially, you know, we're working out what that looks like, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like your physician. It could be a mental health therapist, or it could be potentially somebody that you just talk to on the phone mm-hmm. once and they do a quick talk about your mental health and they can prescribe via telemedicine. Mm. So that's kind of, we're kind of juggling between the two, and we might have to actually make 2 separate products, one for the consumer market and one for prescription. But it is, you know, anxiety and depression is such a large subset of people mm. now, unfortunately, mm. that it still would be very accessible. You would just have to go through that hurdle. But the positive of going through that hurdle is not only are we able to what we call make claims, so actually say, you know, this will impact your mental health in these variety of ways, but we're also able to get insurance reimbursed. So now, not only could doctors could prescribe digital medicine, but then insurers could reimburse it. And so that's where it gets really interesting. Yeah. And then the scale starts to accelerate from there. And I will mention too that I have another VR company that I'm building in tandem, and it's called Genius X. Mm-hmm. And this is a VR education platform. And we are launching that on the main Quest marketplace on December 1st of this year of 2022. So that is fully consumer focused, and it is all around personal and professional development. It's essentially like Masterclass meets Hogwarts in VR. It's a fully social open world experience, but we have all sorts of very interesting game mechanics around yoga classes or breath work or mindfulness, but it's all utilizing the things that we know and love around like 360 projection map domes inside of a VR space, or doing Qigong and having your hands being tracked and creating energy balls with your hands in VR. And like, we have a public speaking course where you literally stand in front of a virtual audience and give your public talk so you could prepare for when you do the real thing. So it's all about, basically the thesis of that company is taking this kind of theoretical knowledge that we are raised with and just, you know, sitting at, even e-learning isn't any better, but literally just sitting and staring at an instructor, to now fully embodied applied learning. So basically transferring knowledge into wisdom is kind of the main thesis for the company. And so as SoundSelf continues and we're doing, you know, really trying to break through the regulatory path and do the clinical research and really like prove what's possible for the future of digital medicine with GeniusX, that's the name of the company. The platform, the app is called Retreat. Mm-hmm. So very much think of it as a virtual reality retreat. That will be available in a few short weeks. And that's something that people could download direct on their headset and start to access some of this transformative entertainment.
Wow. Wow. So many different avenues that you're taking right now. Like taking technology, which right now is, you know, honestly, in sort of the collective consciousness is being looked at as something that's actually pulling us away from being healthy. And it's actually looked at as being a more toxic element to today's society. But what you're saying is no. We're going to transform this, get it FDA approved, right? And potentially transform healthcare and specifically mental healthcare. That is, wow, that is fascinating. You mentioned something earlier, which I want to kind of just touch on. You said benevolent technology. That is a very interesting term. What does benevolent technology mean to you?
Yeah. So it's definitely starting to pick up a lot of traction. I've been so busy building two companies that I this is a really good kind of example of me just getting out here there with the message. Yeah. And I definitely plan to share this more. I was just at Wonderland, which is a big psychedelic conference in Miami last week, and gave a talk specifically around the convergence of psychedelics and technology. It was really well received. And I think the main message for people is, at least for me, it's just around shifting that fear of technology into inspiration. Mm. And right now, yes, we are inundated with just this, you know, fear. And when we look at documentaries like The Social Dilemma that became very, very popular, it was a lot about the problem, very, very little about the solution. I mean, bless Tristan Harris. I think he's done a lot of incredible work, but where is the solution? And then we look at someone like Elon Musk, and he has these like doomsday AI predictions. And he's the guy that, you know, is freaking behind OpenAI, which is like the biggest AI company, and using GPT-3 that's kind of taking over a lot of the space.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that there is a lot of room for positive messaging. And to be quite honest, I think a lot of the people that have this doom and gloom approach at the very top of the food chain in the tech world are very unhappy people. Mm. And what they're creating and what they're promoting is literally just a mirror and a reflection on themselves. So for me, what that looks like is just by doing what I'm doing, which is, instead of being a thought leader, I'm very much focused on being an action leader. Mm-hmm. I have a mentor that said that to me once that really stuck. He's like, we don't need any more thought leaders. We need action leaders. So what that means for me is creating these positive examples and showing people what's possible. I think that with the emergence of VR, AR, and AI specifically, I'm not too much on the blockchain space, although I know that is a very integrated part. Again, kind of coming back to just like the thesis for me around entertainment. I don't find entertainment in blockchain. Like, I leave that to the financial guys. Right. It honestly like sucks my soul out when I even get involved in blockchain or crypto. So I'm happy to, and that's like, I'm also willing to educate people that like Web3 or the spatial web or the metaverse that people continually talk about is it's two sides. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's the heavy blockchain NFT cryptographic whole experience on one side, and then there's the AR VR, which is the visual, the user experience, the user interface, and the actual experience itself that I'm very interested in. So for me, benevolent technology is being able to leverage these up and coming exponential technologies to show people what's possible and provide positive examples. So for me as well, it's not only mental health, it's also education. I feel that those are basically the two foundational pillars that all other systemic change happens from. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very much focused on those two avenues.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, I could say a lot about it, but I think that, and I'm happy to share links and things maybe even after the show, absolutely, but there is a lot of very interesting, what I call like conscious developers, or I even call them like alien developers, because they're not only high level computer programmers, they're also meditation mm-hmm. coaches, and they practice yoga every morning, and they're in their bodies, you know? And I think also what's interesting, and when people kind of get freaked out about VR, which I know a lot of people are, is that it's actually the most human way to interact with technology. When you think about being slouched over your little, you know, window into the internet and using your hands and mainly just your fingers and thumbs to navigate a world, that's not a very human way to connect. Same thing with your phone. Mm. But when you're in a virtual space, you're actually making eye contact with people. I'm standing the entire time I'm in VR. I'm using my hands and my feet. That component of it, I think, lends well to developers now being in the space and being like the actual definition of an embodied developer. Mm. So they're creating content now that's not only highly enjoyable, but it's very, very rewarding and transformational in its own right. So yeah, there's a movement happening. It's definitely still a groundswell right now, but I would advise people to check out like the transformative technology movement, mm-hmm. which a woman named Nicole Bradford, who's an advisor of ours, has started and spearheaded. There's also the consciousness hacking movement that Mikey Seagal has been a founder of, and he's an incredible human as well. And, you know, it's still very underground, and it's cool to see it start to rise up alongside psychedelics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in the psychedelic world or the biohacking world have no idea about this neurohacking transformative gaming experience, but it's actually getting FDA approved much faster than psychedelics and a lot of biohacking tech too, yeah. right? So it's being looked at by, you know, the healthcare industry or the government in a very serious light as well. So it's cool to help spread that message.
Yeah. Well, gaming hasn't really gotten yet the stigmatization, right? That psychedelics adopted during the second wave, during the 70s and the Nixon administration and all of that. Now that you're, you know, potentially getting this FDA approved and you have a rising movement around psychedelics, the shift from the stigmatization of them being more of a recreational party drug to something that actually with intention can be used to create massive shift and transformation. So how do you see psychedelic therapists and people in the psychedelic space that you just mentioned aren't familiar with this? How do you see them being able to use these tools as they're, you know, developing integration or potentially as another option? Mm-hmm. How does that fit into the whole sort of psychedelic toolbox?
Yeah, so that's a great question. That's our number one use case with SoundCell specifically right now, is we're working with about 60, I think it's closer to 70 now, psychedelic therapists, mainly ketamine therapists. Mm-hmm. They're a part of what's called an IRB approved internal study. So it's like a real world study of safety and efficacy that they're working on with us as therapists and also with their patients. And what that means for them and practically in their practice is typically as a preparation tool. So what we're looking at creating is essentially more consistent outcomes and utilizing something that creates a deep surrender response, gets people into a very meditative, but also like activated and embodied state prior to going into a psychedelic experience. A lot of times for first timer anxiety, that's hugely important.
Yeah.
Kind of gives them a little glimpse of what's possible. So there's that side of it. And for me too, I always kind of compare it to, you know, like if you were to speed to yoga class and try to get there on time, which I've tried to do here in LA, you're so stressed out by the time you got there. It would have been better if you were just not have left at all. Like you're working through your stress at the yoga class, you know, that you got just from the 30-minute car ride. So that I think is really relevant for a lot of therapists, especially considering that they are extremely busy people. Most of them are very overworked and they don't have the quality control of understanding what's happened with their patient between the last time they spoke with them or their onboarding call and when they walk into their office. So this tool is being used as essentially a way to prime their physiologically and you know, their neurology for going into a psychedelic experience, which ideally creates more consistent outcomes on the back end because they're going into it as a more reliable, balanced state. And then the integration side is very interesting, and we're starting to do more research around, because what we're seeing is essentially an activation in the brain very similar to taking a full dose of psilocybin, meaning default mode network shutting off, mm-hmm. a big increase in theta and alpha. And what's really interesting is increase in gamma brainwaves, which is very hard to create. And that's essentially done by either large doses of psychedelics, peak performers in the midst of flow state typically, or like a very, very deep meditation. So that is very interesting to us, because if we're able to bring back similar brainwave states as if you were to be on a psychedelic, then what we're experiencing anecdotally and wanting to pursue more research on is people actually recalling memories from their psychedelic journey that they had forgotten as soon as they came out. So this could be that you do our experience, you know, a couple hours after your psychedelic journey, or it could be a few days after, or a few weeks after. I've even personally done it a few months after a psychedelic experience and had those epiphanies and aha moments from my psychedelic journey come back to me, things that I completely lost memory of. You know, I think for most people, we maybe remember 5 or 10% of a psychedelic journey if it's a deep one, especially with a therapist. So being able to recall those things and further integration work. We are also using it as a standalone treatment. So one of the studies that we're doing is out of the University of Milan, and they're essentially using our technology as a substitute for a psychedelic journey, but within a psychedelic protocol. So this means that, you know, we're kind of spoiled here in the US and definitely in Canada, where we have access to psychedelics. Most countries don't. Most countries, it's highly illegal still. And then if you look at the hundreds of millions probably of people worldwide that are on SSRIs and contraindication medicines that actually don't allow them to take psychedelics, then you look at the people that really need it most, which is first responders, active duty military, they're not able to do psychedelics either. So Right. We're looking at as it being not only an adjunct to the psychedelic experience, but also as a complete substitute as we continue to develop the technology and essentially create this full digital drug.
Wow. That is fascinating. And as I'm sort of listening to what you're saying, what's interesting is many of the practitioners that I'm talking to and working with now, really a big part of their practice is communing with nature, right? Like really separating, and a lot of the retreats are outside of the cities to be able to allow those to be sort of released of everything that happens in the big city with all the technology, everything, going to, you know, a place like Costa Rica, going into nature, whether it's, you know, the jungles of Peru, and taking that in. So are you finding any pushback from more traditionalists who say, look, the only way to commune, you know, truly is to commune with nature? Is there any of that that you're kind of running into? And I'd like to hear about, you know, how you kind of respond to that, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily getting pushback. We are really like inundated right now with therapists that want to use our technology. Like surprisingly, people that you would consider being very, you know, traditional, even like indigenous practitioners. So, but of course, I'm not really going to hear a lot of the people that don't want to try it because they just aren't reaching out to us, right? Yeah. But I do get this a lot in interviews and, you know, on stage and Q&As and stuff. I mean, typically what I will say first and foremost is that I'm not a transhumanist. Mm-hmm. And transhumanism, for people that don't know, they believe that technology will solve all the world's problems. They want to upload their consciousness into a computer and live forever and all of the fun dystopian experiences that kind of the Singularity Institute and Ray Kurzweil and all those guys are kind of petitioning for. Mm-hmm. I am very much a believer that we could coexist with technology. I also believe that it's a kind of a runaway train right now. I don't think that we could slow it down. I think we could potentially change the tracks or change the conductor of the train. So for me, it's less about how does this impact the natural experience, and again, more just meeting people where they're at. Mm. So, you know, I think it's beautiful that people could spend the money to go on a retreat, but unfortunately, a lot of people can't. Mm. And, you know, such a large population, I think it's something insane, like 90% of the planet is, you know, now in these urban dwellings.
Yeah.
This just is, again, providing an experience for them that they're already comfortable with, mm-hmm. at least to an extent. And for me, ideally, you're learning skills from these virtual experiences that you can take into nature and into the real world. So kind of what I talked about, these, like, you know, mental motor skills, but also something like vocal toning. Mm. So we're incentivizing people to vocally tone. Now, when I go out and meditate in nature, because I try our product so often and use it so often, now I just, when I go out into nature, I'm naturally inclined during my meditations to chant mantras, and it drops me very, very quickly into a meditative state, more so than if I was to do a silent meditation practice. So, you know, the idea is that you're learning these skills and that they're staying with you outside of the technology, and you don't become dependent upon it. Mm. And I think that's really a big promise with the digital therapeutics movement in general, is that unlike a pharmaceutical that a doctor prescribes and they're like, hey, you get to take this for the rest of your life, you know? And a lot of times they say that if you don't and you miss a few days, you're going to have problems.
Right.
With a digital therapeutic, we're seeing lasting neurological change in people that essentially enables them to do an experience for 2 or 3 months and then create that neuroplasticity that lasts, you know, after the fact. So not only is our digital therapeutics proving to be safer and more effective, they're also proving to not create a dependency and create lasting outcomes without the use of them.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's really around education. And I think, you know, people that are naturalists, like, bless you for being able to have, like, I live in Topanga. I'm like right outside of the city center here in LA and get to live in a, you know, beautiful nature canyon. But, you know, it's 3 or 4 times more expensive to live where I do than if I was to live in the city. And that's just the reality of it is, like, we want people to be able to access these things. But at the end of the day, we want to just be able to scale this effectively and at least for me, provide an outlet to kind of get them going. Mm. You know, like, maybe they're not inclined to drive into nature, but they do a few deep meditative practices that they've never experienced before. And now they're like, okay, I think I should invest in myself and go to a retreat or work directly with a therapist. It's just a matter of again, meeting people where they're at.
It sounds like giving accessibility and priming the pump, so to speak. So for those that are already in the practice, this is another application that can be used, another tool in the tool belt. So it's fascinating. And I know I've said that a lot, but this is just something else. And what you're doing in this space is just groundbreaking, really. What's your vision for the future of technology and wellness? Like, you've mentioned scaling quite a few times. So what does that vision look like? Fully scaled out and technology and wellness are now working very well together. What does that look like for you in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think about this a lot and you could, you know, it's like depending on the time frame, right? Like 5, 10, 30, 100 years.
Yeah.
It could get really weird really quick. But yeah, I mean, for me, it really comes back to software. That was a big kind of impetus for me getting involved in the VR gaming space was looking at all this really expensive biohacking technology. You know, like, I have a barrel sauna in my backyard. It was 10 grand. Like, a lot of this technology that, like, a float pod or something, even if you were to just go in for a session, whatever it is, $100 an hour. And just understanding that software is this infinitely scalable technology that essentially will be embedded in every device. And we're seeing that obviously happen with smartphones, but in the next 5 or 10 years, everyone will own a VR or an AR headset, at least to some extent. You're even seeing companies like Ray-Ban creating glasses around it. I don't think we're very far away from that. So for me, it's what I get passionate about is developing, like, platform agnostic is what we call it, software that is able to be distributed and accessed through any device that somebody would already have. So the future of that, I think it starts to get really interesting when you do similar, like, what we in biohacking call, like, stacking, right? Like, if you stack a, you know, sauna with a cold plunge with a neurotropic and, right, you know, light therapy device. And what'll be interesting is people will have, like, the ability to have a technology stack in their pocket or in their headset that enables them to shift their mood, whether it's around increasing focus or being able to go to sleep easier or depression and anxiety or pain relief or muscle recovery or meeting with an instructor inside of VR and them going through, like, a physical therapy process with you. So I think it's really just about, you know, having all these different indications and use cases and being able to provide not only something that's very effective, but something that's enjoyable. I think at the end of the day, you know, I kind of call a lot of the digital tools out there, like, eat your vegetables experiences. Like, they're really good for you, but they don't taste good.
Mm.
And what we're seeing as a culture and with fast food and Netflix and, you know, the Super Bowl and everything that people are very, very into, it's highly enjoyable and it's highly accessible. And so a lot of times with something like a retreat, it's neither of those things. So if you're looking at, you know, and even when we look at the term therapeutics, typically we think, like, physical therapy, or we think, you know, sitting with a counselor, like, no one's excited really for that process, but you know that you're going to feel better at the end of it. So I think the future of this looks like the enjoyment and the fun that's layered on top of this essentially tech stack that you could access for all your different bodily and mental needs without having to turn to pharmaceuticals or fast food or the traditional addiction mechanisms. But, you know, that's kind of short term. We could talk about longer term. I will say, though, that I do think that in the next few years, the UN, the United Nations, needs to recognize that this benevolent technology movement is happening. They currently have 18 sustainable development goals, or sorry, they have 17. And I believe that they should make an 18th one, which would be specifically focused on these variety of you know, impactful sustainable development goals along this sector of benevolent technology. And whether that looks like, you know, right now there's a lot of schools like coding for kids, but they're not telling the kids what to code. They're just making sure they're quote unquote future-proofing themselves by being able to code in general. It would be very nice if it was a coding for kids around actually impactful projects that will help humanity. So I think that there's a lot of initiatives that could start to be embedded. And it's fascinating to me that when we look at the SDGs, it's the future of work, it's environment, it's the future of education, but there's not something around the future of technology, the future of AI, really the most existential threats to us as humanity. And I think the biggest thing that we're suffering from as a collective around things like social media and technology is not really being addressed. So I would like to be an advocate for that over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that it's going to take a lot of you know, regulatory involvement and government involvement.
Yeah. Well, there isn't anything really that I can think of more cutting edge than this. And as the future becomes a reality, we can stop taking a dystopian look at it and we can start to see what potential transformation and how technology, which was essentially created by nature, right? When we think about, you know, where technology really comes from, how can it serve humanity? And that's where you are. And so thank you for shining this light. You've come into the Alchemist Lounge. You've shared lots of alchemy behind how this has come about. How can someone who's interested in learning about Entheo Digital or tracking the progress, who's really interested in maybe being involved in a beta or something like that, what's the best way for them to reach out to you and get in touch, or what's the best way for them to track?
Yeah. So it's just entheo.digital or entheo.io. We're transitioning from a closed beta for the software into like an early access program. So you could reach out that way and we could potentially onboard you into that program. Now that we are transitioning out of a closed beta, it will be much easier for people to participate. Mm-hmm. And then with GeniusX and our education platform Retreat, you could download that as soon as December 1st. You could go on to retreatvr.io and sign up for newsletters and things. I am going to start being more active, but you could find me on LinkedIn. You could also find me on socials as Luminous Lyle. Yeah. And then I would also suggest checking out Andromeda Entertainment, which is my initial VR company that's still very alive and well, even though I'm no longer in the day-to-day. And that's all centered around games for good and publishing experiences that make you feel better. So yeah, I think that's a good place to start.
Excellent. You are up to a lot here, my friend. And I am looking forward to seeing where all of this goes. I've already signed up on a registration page for the component following the beta. So I'm looking forward to learning more about this. And I'm sure other people in the psychedelic space, in the therapeutic space, really in any space that involves transformational work or just supporting humanity will gain a lot from learning more about this and potentially getting involved. So thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for coming into the Alchemist Lounge. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Absolutely, Lyle. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.